Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray.
Good evening, Michael.
Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Seems to be our ongoing experience.
It's our ongoing experience every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, moment by moment.
Moment by moment.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday, and then a bunch of moments, and then another Wednesday.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
You're listening to KZSU Stanford. We're at 90.1 FM in the Bay Area. You can reach us over the internet as well at kzsulive.stanford.edu. Sherry's been a Zen student and teacher for more than 25 years, and she's written a whole bunch of books. Fabulous books.
That's the official count.
A whole bunch. She has another book coming out this spring, and she has a new website as well. That website is www.sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R. If you want to join us today, please give us a call. We'd love to talk with you. Our phone number here is 650-723-9010. We're here to talk about whatever people want to talk about.
Exactly.
Yeah, whatever's going on.
And do we have a quote for the day that's going to be our point of focus?
We do have our quote for the day. Our quote for the day is, don't believe anything.
Don't believe anything.
Which seems kind of innocuous.
Yes, terrifying.
Or terrifying.
Depending on your depending on your perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It does, I like that little quote because it helps me keep in mind that there is not anything to accumulate on this path. And that any time I'm believing something, it means that I'm not open to what's here now. So belief is kind of has to be something that I'm carrying with me from another time. So if something is so, it's going to be so in this moment, as it was in the last moment, as it will be in the next moment. So I don't need to worry about losing anything that is true. But if I'm believing things, then it requires me to drag them around and thinking, I've noticed that beliefs can get kind of tired and dusty if we drag them around behind us long enough.
So. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
So don't believe anything.
Don't believe anything.
Yeah.
Instead of carrying them around from the past and projecting them into the future.
Yeah. We can just let go, be here in this moment, as our friend Ram Dass would say, be here now, and everything that we need is right here if we're open to it. If not, if we're clinging to things that aren't here, then we tend to suffer.
Yes. Yes. Great. I'd like to make one other announcement before we go to our caller. Sherry, you're going to be here tonight at Stanford.
That is correct.
That's correct. At 6:30 p.m. at the Arriaga Alumni Center.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to our show right now and you're in the Bay Area, please consider coming over and joining us tonight.
Turn on your car radio. Drive on over, and we'll continue the conversation.
Exactly.
Very good.
Exactly. Great. We have a caller from Redondo Beach on the line. I'd like to welcome Brad to Open Air. You're on the air.
Hello. How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Well.
Well, I've been better, and I wanted to speak to you guys about that if I could.
All right.
You'll have to excuse me a little bit of a time delay there via the internet. I would like to discuss with you guys something you mentioned on the air about the investment people have in suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 32 at this point in my life, and I noticed it seems that I've sabotaged my last career. It seems that I keep myself invested in making myself miserable. My mom always used to tell me I loved being depressed, and I seem to be leading out that path on my own in my own life.
Don't you hate it when it turns out that your mother was right all along?
It's very painful.
It's very painful.
Especially. I'm laughing at the moment, but, you know, yeah. Most of the time such comments have left me in despair.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is the fact now is it seems like I don't know, my last profession was not the easiest, but I always noticed along that path that I was always waiting for happiness to come once I reached a certain level in that profession.
Yeah.
Then I screwed it up.
Now, let me ask you this before we go on. Do you believe that if you hadn't screwed it up and if you had gone on, that that would have resulted in happiness?
Of course.
Okay. Just checking.
Of course, you know. Uh-huh. And even now, with what I'd like to go after in life, I say to myself, I won't be happy until that point. And I've heard you joke endlessly about the fact that it's not about that, but ego or whatever else tells me, you know, it's once I achieve this certain point in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting if we put those two things together. So you have this belief that if you put a certain number of externals together, you'll be happy. And that
right.
sounds like that's a belief that sort of drives your life.
That's been driving it the whole time.
Yeah. And if it's not true, then you would be in kind of a difficult position. So
right.
isn't it actually easier to screw it up before you have to find out?
No, I'm not denying to any extent that sabotaging is not the easier way to do things.
Well, but do you see what I mean by that? That way the belief remains intact. If
right.
you didn't screw it up and you went on ahead and you got all your externals in a row, I guess would be the way we'd finish that, and you're still not happy, what might you do then?
Well, that happened last time, actually.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Last time I reached a certain level, and I'm like, whoa, this is still miserable. I'm still being treated horribly. I'm still taking things personally. Even at this level, once I told myself, once I got here, this is professional I'm referring to.
Uh-huh.
It'd be okay.
And yet you still cling to that belief, even though you've proved to yourself it is not true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on the Enneagram, I'm a type 6. I go down with the ship with the beliefs. I mean,
Yeah,
it's very hard for me to share it.
Yeah. Now, you know this is not terminal, though, don't you?
I don't know at this point.
Uh-huh.
I'm quite concerned about that. I
right.
feel like my two options left are either to jump off a bridge or join a monastery. So.
Mm-hmm. And you're in the debating stage, right? With a slow death or a speedy death. So there you are with this.
I'm laughing now, you realize.
I understand. And that's a good thing, isn't it?
I suppose.
Yeah. Because when we can step back even for a moment and
right.
and see our circumstances, see the humor of our circumstances, just that brief little disidentification sometimes can give us the perspective that we're looking for.
Right.
So you have a choice. You can cling to these beliefs, knowing that they're not true. Or you could consider letting the beliefs go. Now here we get to your original question. You know, it looks like you're choosing suffering.
Right.
Why would you do that? You sound like an intelligent person. Why would an intelligent person choose to suffer? And, of course, as you may know, my response to that is because that's how you stay who you are.
Right.
And most conditioned human beings would rather be who they are and suffer than let go of suffering and lose their identity in the process.
I guess what I'm trying to find out is, despite this being the norm for myself, what will it take for me to get to that place, considering the beliefs are so much that it's based on external standards to get to that point?
Yeah. Well, the place that most of us get to is having suffered enough. Now, you're kidding about the bridge in the monastery, but it's probably not much of a kid.
No, it's not much of a kid at all. In fact, I've considered coming up to where you are many times.
Mm-hmm. Because you're
how bad it is for me.
Yeah, you're kind of up against the wall. So the thing about it for me is it's helpful. Now, you know, an intellectual understanding is a helpful thing for me. It's not for everybody. It is for me. And so in that, it's helpful for me to know when I'm in a position such as the one that you're in, that I do have a choice. I could actually stop believing what I'm believing. Now, if you were an alcoholic, you would one day have to get to the point, if you want to have some other life experience, of realizing that those voices that tell you that you'll be happy when you have a couple of drinks are lying to you. One day, you have to face that fact. You may believe the voices. You want to believe that they're right and that it's true. You want to believe that there is something in a bottle that's going to make you happy. And at some point, you're going to have to face it that that's not true. And you're going to have to let go the belief. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's painful. I mean, there are, you know, entire institutions set up to help people through that transition because it is so hard and so painful. Everything in us wants to say, but it's too hard. I don't want to do this. I just want to go back to the old way.
Everyone else in my life is successful, and there's that comparative factor of me saying, aha, if you would have gotten there, that would have done it for you.
That's right. You're 32?
32, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's hardly, you've hardly hit the doddering stage.
Oh, I...
Right?
Well, you know, the center of the universe thing's telling me, oh, no, it's just you. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well... Trust me, I talk to a lot of people. It's not just you.
Right.
So to be able to turn this around at this point in your life would be a grand thing. Yeah?
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I just feel externally in certain ways I'm not living to my potential right now.
Well, it sounds like you're not. You're living to your belief system.
Right.
So do you choose your potential or your belief system? Because they're mutually exclusive. Yeah? I mean, that's what you've proved to yourself. Those two things cannot coexist. Your belief system says you'll get to a certain point and then you'll be happy, and your belief system also says, and you're not going to make it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's got to go before you're going to have the opportunity to live the life that you suspect and that I would confirm is your birthright.
I've been hit with a little of the stupid dust that you always refer to.
Well, this is the place where most people yell, but what do I do?
Exactly. That's exactly what my mind is telling me. Okay, Sherry, where's the magic pill and what's the answer in terms of my potential? Are you referring to something external in terms of where I get if I quit annihilating myself? Or
no.
Or
the difference.
What it needs to supposedly be.
See, there isn't any external. That's the trick. There isn't any external. So when you are paying attention and you're seeing how you're causing yourself to suffer, not focused on, oh, God, I did it again, because that's not illuminating, right? But when you step by step pay attention and see how you're getting to this place, how those beliefs are being acted out in your life, then you can stop doing that. And you will be different. Now, will the externals of your life be different? Maybe, maybe not. The good news is...
That's the relief. Okay.
That's right. The good news is it won't matter because you will already have what you want.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
It does, and at times I've had that compassion, and then it's floated away.
That's right. And so...
When fear and other things have come back into my life, I'm like, aha, you couldn't handle that last job interview. You screwed it up.
That's right.
Back to the place, Brad,
to me the easiest thing is just to say to that voice, you're right. You're right.
Don't even fight it.
You're right. That's in the past. It's a new day. And here we are now. So,
right.
Okay, and now you start out and you go through the exact same steps and you find out where you make these decisions based on that belief system. And it's pretty easy at this point. It's like that what do I do question.
Right.
Do the opposite. Right? So the voice says...
Are you referring to external standards or just in terms of what I hear in my head?
Well, both.
Okay.
Yeah, both. Because they're really the same thing. Because remember, there is no external.
Right.
Yeah. So you're going along and your belief system tells you to choose A. And you know, when you're paying attention, that that's not the choice. That's the choice for belief system. That's the choice for this. This will make me a success, and you know it will actually cause you to fail.
Right.
Yeah. And now here's some difficult information. However, ultimately, I think it's helpful. You may not get this the next time. You may have to do this.
2 years ago, Mike, I should be over this.
That's right. You may have to do this 2 or 3 more times before you get it really clearly. You may only have to do it once. Depends on how motivated you are.
Right.
You know, it's how many times you're going to believe those voices that say, oh, you can handle it now. You're over that alcoholism thing. You know, you can handle it. Just a couple of drinks.
Right.
Okay? However many times you fall for that is up to you. And here's a little something to consider. The level of self-hatred that is inspired by the failure is the amount you're investing in failure. So when you can do this and you see it and you go, got it, next, got it, next, right. And there's no self-hatred and there's no failure. This is just learning how to choose what's going to lead to your well-being. You'll go very, very quickly.
Right.
If it's a matter of, now I have to spend the next 3 or 6 months wallowing in what a loser I am, why me, this is never, okay, then it's going to slow you up.
Right.
Okay, one of my favorites, somebody was telling me recently that Michael Jordan, he's a basketball player, right? Yeah, okay.
I don't know much about sports, but I know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's Michael Jackson, too, and I always get those, you know, I don't get the people confused, but the names can kind of throw me. So when he misses a shot,
right.
He stops and says, wow, I usually make that. So that's the information he gets, not, oh, my God, what's the matter with me? I'm the best basketball player in the history of the game, and I just blew that shot.
Right.
He doesn't do it. He just says, huh, wow, well.
I've been doing it since I was a small child. It's tough, you know.
That's right.
Very, very big event on my part.
That's right. But no bigger than anybody else's, Brad.
Right.
We're all drunks.
That is the key. Right.
Yep, we're all drunks. Okay?
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Brad.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Brad, thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air. I'm here with Sherry Huber, and we're talking about everything. If you'd like to join our conversation, please call us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, Brad brought up some issues that I think all of us struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, universal life situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like, for me, it's often, what's my experience and what are my beliefs?
Yes.
And trying to figure out which one is which.
Yes.
And which one am I going to choose?
And, right, the hurdle that he's facing, which is, how do I stop choosing my beliefs over my experience? I know how this is going to go, and I choose it anyway. You know, he mentioned the stupid dust. There it is. You know, we're at that crucial moment of decision. Suddenly the veil falls. We go unconscious for a few minutes, and we come to having made that same decision that's going to take us down that old path to suffering. It's very difficult, very, very difficult. We can't, you know, as we were talking, you know, we're all in this.
Yep.
We're all in this. And that doesn't minimize the power of it, the pain of it, doesn't mean that what we're up against is any less difficult, because it's something that all human beings struggle with.
Yeah.
Yes.
It feels like, from my experience, it's like a struggle for my soul.
Yes.
When you get to that point of clarity, or, you know, it's really feels like a big battle going on.
Yes.
What am I going to choose?
Yeah, exactly. All those images of God and the devil wrestling for your soul, and the dark night of the soul, and those sorts of pictures that we get, those are real. People are talking about the very experience that Brad is going through.
Yes. And we all go through it?
And we all go through it. And not just once. You know, it would be nice.
Daily.
Yeah, right. If there were a dark night, you know, and it's X number of hours long, and then you get through it, and whew, that's behind me. But it's not. And where we get this idea that we're going to get finished, it's so sad and so painful, because it's not my experience that we get finished. It's my experience that we learn to enjoy life exactly as it is, not this idealized, you know, when I get to this certain place, then I'll always be happy. I'll always be the person I want to be, and everything will go my way. And, you know, did that ever happen to anybody? Not that we know of. So to get past that belief that the way life is a mistake, that the way I am is a mistake, that what I struggle with is wrong, that I'm doing something wrong because I'm struggling, get it, that this is hard, waking up and ending suffering. And that's Buddhist language for it. You know, we could talk about it in many, many kinds of language, but just getting past the places of pain and difficulty to having a productive, happy, meaningful, loving life. It's very, very, very difficult. And we go through these stuck places over and over and over again. So if we like to grow, if we like to go through difficult things and get to the other side just to see what the view is like, then it's going to be fun. If it's a contest and it means that I'm losing every time it doesn't go the way I think it should, then it's going to be miserable.
And it seems to me the power of this work is putting it out there.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's not me.
That's right.
We're alone, in it together. Hiding it, suffering.
Yes. The Buddha arranged it, you know, with Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Sangha is the group of people who work on these issues together for support. So that if nothing else, we all look at each other and say, wow, you too? Wow, me too.
Yeah,
we're not alone. Isolation and alone and abandoned and I'm the only one, such suffering in that. And that part is really unnecessary. Yeah. If we all hold hands, it's much, much easier.
Yeah, and it seems like with that we can get past this idea that life should be easy.
Yeah.
I sort of walk around the world and looks like everybody's doing fine, and then I can get this belief that, well, my life should be easy as well.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we walk around very specially selected places, right? We don't walk around in the places where it's obvious that life is way harder than anything that we can imagine.
Yes.
In June, a group of us are going over to Africa. We're finally, some people know about our AIDS orphans project in Africa, and we're going to go in June. And I am eager to go, partly, in large part, for that experience, because I have been so privileged all my life. And I can look around and, with my selective perception and say, well, compared to the, as I'm fond of saying, 0.0000001% of the population, my life is really difficult. You know? And then you start spending a little time around people who are starving to death, who have incurable diseases and very short lifespans, and still manage to be happy, which is an extraordinary thing to consider. And it just, it all comes into perspective. Life is hard.
Life
is hard. Doesn't mean that we can't enjoy it. Doesn't mean that it's also not beautiful and wonderful and joyous. But, yeah, it's hard to wake up. It's hard to pay attention.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. You can join our conversation by calling 650-723-9010. We're going to have a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We've been getting a lot of emails here, and we'd like to address some of those now. If you have an email question that you want to send to us, please send an email to openair@kzsu.org. First one here. Dear Sherry, I was very intrigued by your remarks at the beginning of the last show about the focus of our attention and moods. I've been dominated, if not defined, by my moods my whole life. And since practicing with you, I have begun to learn about a different perspective. I woke up today feeling nervous and didn't do my usual thing of looking for the reason.
Very good.
Very good. Instead, I kept returning to my breath and noticing the sensations in my body. I reminded myself that it's okay to feel this way and I can be with myself. The nervousness stayed with me all day, and tonight I thought maybe it was just energy. Could even be called excitement, but it felt uncomfortable. Do you have any suggestions? Thank you.
Wow, and so it stayed there all day. That's impressive, isn't it? Because usually, of course, energy kind of moves around and moves through. Although we do have habitual patterns of holding the body in such a way that energy can remain in certain parts of the body. And so that's interesting. Big applause for not labeling it.
Yes.
And I can't remember what you said sort of toward the end there, though it sounded like the nervousness stayed with me. Was that the phrasing?
Stayed with me all day.
Yeah. And so it became nervousness again. Even though there was a watching it and trying to let it just be energy, it becomes nervous. The attempt to label it excitement can make it kind of interesting. It was still uncomfortable, though. And so for me, that's it's always interesting to see for whom is it uncomfortable. Because the person who is there, the part of us who is there deciding about this, is really the key player. So depending on which aspect of my personality is there, or whether I'm coming from a centered place, it gets labeled this or that. It's a good thing or a bad thing. I like it. I don't like it. It means this or it means that. So, yes, the effort to get back to just allowing the sensations to be there in the body, noticing what the story is that arises with the sensations, and as our little ditty for the day, not believing it, just allowing it to be whatever it is. As we practice being still with and breathing with, just allowing whatever is there to be there, breathing with it, we become more comfortable with it. There's less of a tendency to want to give it a label like nervousness. Yeah, it's just energy. Then again, for whom is it uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. So we can look at that person. All right, well, that part of me, it maybe is a worrier type or a nervous, anxious type. So it wouldn't be good to let that person be there dealing with those sensations in the body. So could we ask somebody else to be there, the part of me who is interested in new things, the part of me who would call it excitement, and then see what story gets attached to that. Can I come back to a centered place where I don't need to label it anything, and then just allow it to be whatever it is and watch how it transforms?
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing to me how often we quickly go from that sensation to that label.
Oh, and then the story.
And then we're off.
Yeah, yeah. And that's if we're paying attention. If we're not paying attention, we're just off. We have no idea how we got there. You know, maybe there are those sensations in the body, and suddenly I'm, in the fear book, I tell a story about being in Georgia when my grandson was a toddler, and I was building a fence for him. And I'll try to make it short. But in the course of the evening, I'm just going through this, everything from somebody has pushed the button and their nuclear warheads on their way to this country, to the plane that I'm going to catch tomorrow is going to crash, to somebody is outside getting ready to break into the house, and it turned out that I had food poisoning.
So a lot of sensations in your body.
Tons of sensations in the body. Insane sensations in the body. And my mind was going insane trying to keep up with them.
Keep up with the labels.
Yeah. Well, it must be this. Well, it must be that. Well, it must be. Well, I mean, it's something horrible. This is more horrible than anything I've ever encountered, because look at the way I'm feeling. And then, of course, the relief, the incredible relief of, oh, it's just food poisoning.
Yes.
Of course, then we can go into, am I going to die? Which could set off another whole barrage of insanity. So if we're watching and we're paying attention and we're seeing how it all hangs together, that's one thing. But if we miss the connections, then we can just be lost in a story of doom and horror, and there's really nothing going on except energy is moving through the body.
Yeah. Two things occurred to me about that. First is a line from one of your books, which I love, which is, nobody ever died of uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes. Although, doesn't it feel like we're going to? Yeah.
Some part of us is.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
And the second thing that occurred to me is that experience of going through that place and coming out the other side.
Yes.
Over and over.
Yes.
And then I start to know, wow, there's a lot of energy going on in my body, and this has happened before, and I've lived through it, and maybe it's anxiousness, maybe it's excitement, maybe it's, but I somehow I got through it.
Yes.
And I enjoyed it to some degree.
Yes.
That enjoyment, that fear, that,
yeah,
all of it.
It's very alive.
It's very alive.
I have a friend who's actually quite an aware, conscious person, who struggles with anxiety, and struggles. At one point, a mutual friend said, have you ever considered that it might be coffee? And the response, the look, was just astounding. It was like, well, no. Do you think it? So here's somebody who would get up in the morning and have a couple of three cups of coffee. Strong coffee. California coffee.
Double latte.
Yeah, and then feel anxious and try to deal with the anxiety. Well, you know, turn to decaf, and a lot of that anxiety might go away. So there are often things that we're doing that are directly affecting the energy level in our body, And it would be good to consider that, you know.
Like
what we're putting into it. Like what we're talking to ourselves about.
Yes.
So I wake up in the morning and I start through, oh, no, I've got that meeting. And
I'm
what
late.
Is this? And I'm late. And I but I need to do
clothes.
This. Right. I have to do the laundry before I can go to work. And then I wonder why I'm anxious. A lot of anxious people are habitually late. Those two things can go together.
Great. We have another caller on the line. I'd like to welcome Carolyn to Open Air. Carolyn, you're on the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
First-time caller, but long-time groupie of the show.
Oh, good.
Great.
Good.
We like groupies.
Yeah, I've really, really been enjoying listening. I thought I'd let you know, sitting on hold on the phone, it's good awareness practice.
Oh, I bet it is. Is it? Does it have something to do with the anxiety that we've been talking about?
Absolutely. As you were talking about it, I was going, yes, I'm experiencing that anxiety energy. Ooh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So it was kind of nice to listen to you talking about it. They're talking about my experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, I hope everyone listens to this, and those folks out there who think, oh, I would like to call, but that's just too scary. Now,
yeah.
Now it can be just a little opportunity for awareness practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, little mini workshop there on hold.
Okay, well, I guess that's it.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Got what you needed.
Well, I wanted to kind of bring up something that's it's a little bit hard for me to talk about because, well, for one reason, the critical voice is saying this isn't appropriate. So, of course, there's some anxiety about that. But
mm-hmm.
It has to do with my relationship with my cat.
Uh-huh.
He had his real family, and then he would come and see me when he had the time. And I fell in love with him, and I would take care of him when his family would go on vacation and stuff. Well, they moved out of the area, and they asked me if I would like to feed him, and if he wanted, he could move down to my yard full time. And I was just, of course, you know, I get to have him full time. But Sherry, it's so interesting because I've lost that feeling and something else, and I'm sure it has something to do with my conditioning, but it's so emotional for me, it's cloudy.
Mm.
I'm starting to think of him as all I do is worry about him.
Mm.
So it's not like, oh, I wonder when he's going to show up. It's, oh, my God, he hasn't shown up. Where is he?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I still love him dearly, but there's this layer of worry and anxiety. That's our topic tonight. It's like I kind of miss my old relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what I've done, how I've kind of, I feel like I've collaborated with my conditioning to change it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does this make sense?
Well, I think so. I mean, I certainly know those feelings that you're talking about.
So, how do people ever have kids?
Well, there you are.
Yeah.
I heard a quote recently. I wish I knew who said it, but I don't. That becoming a parent is requires you to become comfortable with your heart walking around outside your body. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's exact either, but it's close.
It's close enough.
Yeah, and that's, so of course I'm wondering if that's part of what has happened, is that, you know, we get to the point where we have so much invested in someone,
mm-hmm.
that if something happens to them, we wonder if we would be able to survive it.
You know, that to hear you say that, that feels real to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pain of it would just be too great. Mm-hmm. And while he belonged to somebody else, you know, that's kind of, well, that's, you know, there are lots of cats in the world, and they're all cute, and they're all sweet, and, you know, you walk past and pet them, and they come and visit, and it's really, but this is different. Now you're family.
Yeah.
Now you're, it's a whole different depth and quality of relationship.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of see how I've changed it, because, you know, as far as he's concerned, everything's the same.
Right.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's like, hi, how are you doing? And I'm, oh, you're here at last. You know,
uh-huh.
It's pretty funny just thinking about it. But
well, when we talk about aspects of the personality, okay, the different parts of you, that to me is a piece of what has happened, right? One part of you had the relationship with him originally, and now another part of you has the primary relationship.
And would drop everything and run out to greet him. And now, I mean, I think you've hit it right on the head. The one now is, you know, she's 50 and wearing her baby.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it might be helpful to spend a little time with her.
With the 50-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. To let her talk about her experience and... you know, do a little of that mentoring, that,
No, that's wonderful, because she's always mentoring everybody else who's younger, and so it would be nice to get some mentoring herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because maybe she hasn't had a chance to talk to anybody about this.
You know, she hasn't.
Yeah.
Until tonight.
Yeah, and so what if something did happen to him? You know,
yeah.
It might be helpful for her just to be able to articulate her fears and concerns, and not that we can ever have a plan,
no. Yeah.
But there's something about acknowledging that, yeah, I don't know what that would be like. That would probably be more painful maybe than anything I've ever experienced. Yeah.
That you're right. She does need to talk to somebody about that.
Yeah. And
maybe another mom.
Yeah, she might. Yeah, I was just going to say, she might find other new moms, because new moms, that is kind of that's a rugged place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just all that love and all that, you know, you just fall in love, and then, like you've never fallen in love before in your life.
Yeah.
And then you face the... this could be finite.
Yeah.
What if? Yeah.
What if?
What if?
Yeah.
And could I survive it?
Mm-hmm. This has been so helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Carolyn. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you want to join our conversation, you can call us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, I was thinking during that conversation, a couple things came up for me. One is how we take care of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
as we go through challenging situations.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that came up
and
is...
And
how we often don't.
How we're kind of conditioned to just go unconscious, go into survival, coping... mechanisms, and sort of wait it out.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like what you're talking about is becoming aware of what's going on. It's sort of becoming aware at some level that I'm a little off, I'm not really together here, or there's part of me that's not being taken care of.
Yeah.
And sort of consciously bringing attention to that.
And it's wonderful in a situation like that, because what we hope is that as much time and care and attention and compassion and love will go to the human as to the kitty.
Yes.
Because they're both equally innocent and defenseless and vulnerable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's for me, it reminds me of, as you were talking about earlier, there is no external.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that when I learn to take care of myself, everybody else benefits.
Oh, yes.
Because when I know how to take care of myself, I'm available. I'm more clear about what's going on with other people. I'm more present, compassionate.
Yes.
And I'm there for that.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're not doing that, because, of course, we have a lot of conditioning that says taking care of yourself is selfish, it's egocentric,
yes.
It's all of those kinds of things. But if we're not taking care of ourselves, we really are a burden.
Yeah. When I'm not taking care of myself, I'm of no use to anyone else.
In fact, it's kind of worse than that, right? You're a drain on everybody else.
Yes.
My teacher used to talk about becoming a social relief.
Yes.
So all your needs are met. You're taking care of yourself. So everybody can just relax. You're fine. Now they can turn their attention to the ones who are still in need of something.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a great gift to give to people, to give to the world.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. So you're available. People can see that you're listening, you're paying attention,
mm-hmm.
and that's valuable for people.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And plus, it's so much nicer place to live from, you know, to feel cared for, to feel listened to and heard and supported and appreciated.
Yes.
All of those things that we go around hoping we're going to get from somebody else.
Yes.
If we just, you know, cut out those middle folks and give ourselves directly what we need, then, as you say, we're really available for other people. We can be generous, in fact, because we're not in need.
Yeah.
We're not lacking. We're not focused on deprivation and what we're trying to get from somewhere else. We're complete.
Yeah.
So we have something to offer.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Phrase that comes to mind is compassion, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No matter what I've done, how horrible it seems,
yeah.
You can find that compassion there.
Yes, and then you can move on.
Yes.
You don't have to stay mired in that, oh, woe is me, or aren't I awful, or, you know, it's kind of, I don't know if this would sounds kind of harsh to say, I don't mean it that way, but the person, you were taught to feel bad as if that's some kind of contribution. You know, so I'm walking around, oh, I'm nothing, I'm nobody, oh, I'm just a, you know, I'm messing up, I'm blah, 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 blah. Well, that's not special. So to put that behind us and be able to just be present with life as it is, feels so much better for oneself, and then it feels better to be around that person.
People can see it.
Yeah. So it gives us an alternative to a life of suffering, which I'm supportive of.
You're going to choose that one.
I'm going to take that door. Yeah.
Great. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to be right back after a short break. So if you want to join us, please give us a call at 650-723-9010.
Do you need to reduce your housing costs? Are you tired of living alone? Or are you feeling that your home is too much to handle by yourself? You can do something about it. Home sharing may be for you. Sharing expenses or exchanging services such as housekeeping, cooking, and or companionship could be the answer. If you have a home in San Mateo County or are interested in living there, call the Human Investment Project at 415-348-6660. That's 415-348-6660 to make an appointment at one of their four offices for assistance in finding a compatible housemate and easing your housing costs. This message has been brought to you by KZSU Stanford.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. You can join our conversation at 650-723-9010 this week or any week. We're here every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., so please join us. After this show at 6 p.m., we'll have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend, followed by Wednesday Night Live at 9 p.m. with the Fleshies. Sherry, we have even more emails. People have been emailing us.
Good.
Which is great. And if you want to email us, please join us. Please send your email to openair@kzsu.org. So, here's an email. About 5 months ago, I started a new professional job. In general, I think the job is a great match for me and has a lot of potential and opportunities. At the same time, I find I'm having an issue that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, a very difficult manager. The word I would use to describe the effect she presently has on me is toxic. Here are some of the things I react to. She has literally told me that she thinks it's important to make people feel bad to motivate them. And she tries.
And she's good at her job.
She's good at her job.
Oh, dear.
Her style is very controlling and micromanaging. She talks down to me and acts like she's mentoring me when, in fact, I know perfectly well what I'm doing. In general, I find this situation deeply frustrating. I do, however, realize intellectually that no one can cause me to suffer but myself. Eventually, I will grow into other projects and work with a completely different mix of people, but that could take several months. In the meantime, I'd like to figure out how to take this as an opportunity to grow. Any ideas would be deeply appreciated.
Mm. Well, that's the one we all dread, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like the writer knows the right answer.
Yes.
Right.
There's a little bit of a leap, a little gap.
Yeah. 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 We know. Okay. This is a spiritual opportunity for me. This is an opportunity for me to awaken and end suffering because, boy, otherwise I'm really going to suffer. With the last caller, we talked about the aspects of the personality a little bit. And I was really relating to being talked down to and having somebody act that way and say those things. I mean, part of me, I can just feel my hackles wanting to get get right up there. And I know that part of myself. I have this person named Cheryl who's my 8-year-old hit person, and her motto is the only good adult is a dead adult. So she's, her fingers are creeping over there for that semi-automatic rifle to deal with the situation
quickly.
And so knowing that about myself, I know that that's not the person that I want to have there. And doing awareness practice, that kind of situation can be kind of appealing because...
You're crazy.
Well, if we truly want to be free. So when I started awareness practice, when I began to look around, I didn't even know it was awareness practice, but when I started to look around for what's going to make sense out of this wacko life, I decided the things that motivated me were if I were in a concentration camp, if I were in a wheelchair, could I be all right? So I want something in my life that I know will give me the ability to be all right. Now, I think I would add this boss to that list, actually, at this point. Can I be all right? And not just all right. Can I be joyful? Can I be free? Can I be so conscious and aware and present that I actually feel compassion and sympathy for this person who is trying to do her job and doing the best that she can from what we would all agree is an unskillful perspective? Can I feel my heart open? Do I need to take all of this personally? Do I need to make it be about me when it so obviously isn't? Anybody who got hired for that job is going to get the same treatment.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with me in this case. And so can I use that job as an opportunity every single day? At the monastery, we do things like, in fact, we're getting ready to do it right away, what's called a sesshin, where people start meditating at 5 in the morning and meditate, taking only meal breaks until about 9 o'clock at night. It's it's, well, you could say it's challenging, or you could say it's grisly, again, depending on your perspective. And people do it because it deepens the practice. It's just so no escape. You know, you're just right there, moment after moment, hour after hour after hour, just as they say, your stuff is coming up, and you're having a chance to see it. Well, this is, you know, this is that kind of situation that this writer is in. It's a sesshin, and so moving to the point of being able to be in a state of well-being while that's going on would just be tremendous. And my encouragement is, lower the standards, drop the standards. Go in there every day knowing exactly what you're up against. Not, I'm going to change this person. I'm going to become the employee that's going to make this manager realize that she is wrong. Not that. Just, I'm going to go in there, and my only goal is to be in as much compassionate awareness as I can all day long. And at the end of the day, I'll look and see what I stumbled over. And I won't beat myself up. I'll have compassionate awareness and acceptance for that. And then I'll make my plan for the next day. I have a friend who is a religious person and finished an extremely arduous tour of duty. And she was telling me that there would be times when she would have to sit in meditation for 2 hours in preparation for a meeting.
Wow.
Yeah.
2 hours of meditation.
Just
preparation for a meeting.
Just to be able to go into the meeting with some kind of hope of not losing her mind. And, you know, that's not a bad thing, to meditate for 2 hours.
That's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. So to approach it that way, that this is the concentration camp. You know, these are the kind of circumstances that if we can be free in these circumstances, we can be free anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. So and if it gets to be too much, find another job.
Yes, yes.
Always keep that option open.
Always keep that option open. Yeah. So what I heard you say was lower the standards,
mm-hmm.
bring as much conscious, compassionate awareness as I can mm-hmm. to being in this place mm-hmm. day after day.
Yeah. No, to go in knowing it is going to be as bad as I imagine and probably worse. Mm-hmm. Not, oh, well, maybe it'll change, maybe it'll get better. Maybe
she'll be sick.
That's right. None of that. No. This is going to be the biggest challenge of my life, and, you know, I'm the old Kung Fu television series, you know, I am Grasshopper. The master does not want me to grab the little whatever it was that was in his hand, and I'm going for that whatever it is that's in his hand. You know, I want to get to the other side of this. I don't actually want it to be easier. I want mastery.
Uh-huh. I want to stay right here.
I want to
see what happens.
That's right. I want to be master in this situation. I do not want to be ruled by my conditioned voices of suffering.
Yeah, the word that comes to mind is, I want to know how my buttons are pushed.
That's right. I'm a warrior. Yeah.
And when I know that, they lose some of their power.
Oh, absolutely. And it sounds like the person who could thrive in these circumstances is going to be a success anywhere.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Good.
Sherry, we're at the end of our hour.
Well, I'll see you next week then.
See you next week.
Excellent.
Same time, same place. If you want to call in next week, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, you're staying here at Stanford.
Yes.
You're going to be here tonight.
That's right.
6:30 p.m. Arriaga Alumni Center mm-hmm. on Galvez Street. If you're listening to this and you're in the area, please come and join us. If you have any questions you want to email us, please drop us an email. You can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. You can also check out Sherry's new website, which is sherryhuber.com. And I'd like to thank some people who've been very helpful to us.
Yes, the gracious, kind, and intelligent people behind the controls there.
Behind the controls. Frank, thanks for helping us. Lori, thanks for joining us today. Next up, we have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend, followed by Wednesday Night Live with the Fleshies. Please join us next week.